Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, who also happens to be, according to our Detroit magazine, 2020's second most popular sports columnist blogger in the Detroit area. So I needed to get it out of the way early. I've been waiting too late in the show the last few weeks. Eric, big news. The Players Association and the league's owners came to an agreement. I believe the vote was 29-3. The owners' vote.
No, that was the players.
The player representative. All right.
Yes. Well,
excuse me.
Yep.
They're going to open training camp, kind of. We're going to go over that. So.
Yeah, basically they just approved that everything would start at the predetermined schedule that they were hoping to hit anyway. So it just keeps everything in motion. But there's a lot of things that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks where they didn't have answers to. Well, now those things are answered. So we'll try and hit that real fast and then get to the meat of our conversation here after.
All right. So first is the player opt-out money. So any player that opts out of playing in the 2020 season, there's two versions of this, right? There's a with no pre-existing conditions and then with pre-existing conditions and how Correct. Much money they'll earn for the 2020 season. I like the one thing, they leave one of the pre-existing conditions out. Go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, no, the pre-existing conditions, they get a higher amount than the voluntary opt-out.
Isn't it $750,000 to $150,000?
It's $350,000 to $150,000.
Oh, $350,000 to $150,000. All right.
Yeah. And we've already seen a player opt out. It's within like a couple hours of the deal getting passed. Lawrence Tardif, the right guard of the Kansas City Chiefs, he has been working in a high risk environment, and he's been helping out with different people who are impacted by COVID. And he said that it's more important to him to work with that community than it is to potentially, you know, play in the NFL this year. And then he worries he could be part of the problem if he plays in the NFL. And so he's already opted out and decided to stay with what he's been doing. And so he'll fall, because that's just a general opt out. He'll go, instead of making $2.3 million this year, he's going to make $150,000. And so that's a pretty
big pay cut.
Yeah, that's a big pay cut. Honorable, very honorable thing to do. And I think he's more, he started the dominoes. I think there's going to be more. I don't think.
Sure, there'll be a few more.
But there's, it's going to be interesting to see how other players react to this.
All right. Well, the one pre-existing condition they left out is for high body mass index. Right, because that would be most of the NFL.
It's like all of the NFL.
Yeah,
right?
I think they said 70-some percent. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that was a nice, interesting little tidbit. All right, across the board accountability. Next thing we're talking about.
Basically, the players were being held accountable to not put themselves into situations where they could contract COVID, and they were being asked to limit things that they do, and basically what this. Part of the addendum does is this says that everybody that's in the building has to now follow these protocols. Coaches, equipment managers, everybody has to follow the same standards as they were asking the players to. So this is just another step towards safety.
Wonder how they are going to deal with that. I mean, who knows at this point, but
yeah,
you know. So I'm sure everybody's going to have their cameras out when they're out and about looking for NFL players. Say they're not being accountable. Here they are.
Yeah, all right. Possible.
Next is the training camp schedule.
Yeah, basically, the way it works is when you first come into the building, whether it's your first day as a player or the first time that you're coming into the building this offseason, you're going to get tested. Then you have to leave for 48 hours while that's processed, and then you come back as long as you don't have COVID, and then you get tested again, and then you can't come back till the next day. During that time, you're having like virtual meetings and whatnot, but then you're tested again on that day four, and you're asked to leave again until you pass that as well, more virtual meetings. So you don't actually get in the building until you've had two tests. And then once that happens, then you're going to get your team physical. Make sure that you're in, you know, proper football shape. You don't have any ailments. You know, they just double check to make sure the health of the player beyond COVID is up to where it needs to be. That's going to take a couple of days to get all those processed. Then it's going to be a full week now. After the players report, it'll be a full week before they actually start strength and conditioning. Now, when they do that, they're going to get to do that for about a week, maybe a little bit, I think a little bit more. And then they get to start practicing around day 16, but they don't actually get to put the pads on until day 21. So for the Lions, their rookies were allowed to report last Tuesday, but they delayed the rookies and just said, we're going to have all of our rookies and all of our veterans go through the same process at the same time. And so everybody is reporting for the Lions on Tuesday. So from Tuesday through Sunday, it's all going to be testing in virtual meetings. They're not actually going to be in that building. And then another week after that, strength and conditioning, and then they'll get on the field, you know, after that. So we're talking like now mid-August before they're actually going to be putting, you know, their feet on the field. So from a media perspective, if we get access, we probably won't get access till, you know, mid-August or maybe even late August. And after that, it's really going to be hard to ascertain how much we can even get out of it. I think they're going to have 8 padded practices before the first game, and that's it. You know, you're not going to have a whole lot else going on. It's going to be a very safety intensive training camp, and you're not going to be able to learn as much as you have in past training camps and preseasons.
All right. That was very interesting when you brought that up before we started about how they're only going to have really 8 padded practices before the first game is played. Now, in the past, they always talked, we see it a lot in previous training camps, previous preseasons, like we're going to see some bad football to start the regular season. It's going to be interesting. And I wonder if the game itself is going to be any different. Yeah. You know, who knows? I wouldn't think so. I would think all the philosophies would still be the same.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be interesting and probably a pretty poor first couple of weeks.
Yeah, the month of September is probably going to be a lot of bad football. And the difficult thing for the Lions in this situation is they have some tough games in the first 4 weeks. And
that could work to their advantage, too, at the same time. Because if everybody's bad, these games might all be coin flips. It could go in their direction.
Sure.
You know, this is, and you know how I feel, the coin flip will likely not go in their direction, but you know, it could work out in their favor.
Yeah. The tricky part is that if they didn't turn over half of their defense, and if they didn't have to implement half of their offensive line or the right side of their offensive line, I feel a little bit more comfortable. It's nice having the offense in place. And
offense is the big one.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, half of the defensive players that they've added are going to know this scheme. So they're not as bad off as some teams. Some teams, we've talked about this in our preview, like a team like Carolina.
Carolina would be number one. Yeah, everything's new.
Yeah, they're going to struggle. So the Lions aren't in the worst shape, but they're not in the best shape. There are some concerns, but there are some positives too. It's going to be sloppy football though, regardless.
All right. Practice squad expansion. I think we're going to get 6 more guys on the practice squad.
Yeah. It was expected to jump up this year from 10 to 12. And then in the next couple of years, 10 to 14. But with the COVID situation, they're allowing up to 16 players this year. Now, you're also not wanting, the NFL doesn't want players like, you know, flopping all over between different teams like we've seen in the past because of the protocols. So what they're doing is they're also allowing you to protect players on the practice squad. So if you get a player on the practice squad and you don't want them to get taken away, you can protect them from and another team won't be able to poach them. So you can do that with four players. So they've added six spots, allowed you to protect four players. They've increased the amount of players that you can put on the practice squad without accrued seasons. So there's going to be veterans on these practice squads that teams are just like holding on to. It's going to be a very different style of practice squad this year. Basically, the practice squad I think is less going to look less like a developmental playground as we've seen in the past with younger players, and instead be more like a minor league, like where you're keeping a third of a team down that you're practicing with, but you're keeping them available for you if you need to call a guy up, because remember they have those call up rules, and then also you can protect guys so that if somebody gets sick, you can shift them up as well. So there's a lot more emphasis put on teams staying together as like a whole. You know, you're going to have like a whole bunch of these. While you have 53 active roster, you're basically going to be carrying a team of 69 players that the league is hoping those 69 players stay with your team pretty much the whole season.
All right. And so you talk about 69 guys between the 53-man roster and the 16-man practice squad. 80, there will be 11 more guys allowed in camp at a time starting August 16th. But does that mean you could still have 90 guys that just can't all be in camp at the same time?
Correct. What you can do, what some teams are doing, Chris Mortensen,
Davian Varsity.
What he wrote was that some teams are going to have half the team practice in like Allen Park, and the other team would practice at Ford Field. And so you can, as long as you're putting them in different environments, then you can maintain your 90-man team. So I don't know what the Lions are going to do, to be honest. Part of me says that I could see them saying, you know, we want to keep all 90 guys to do a proper evaluation. But at the same time, I can also see them saying, we're going to lose 10 guys and this 80 is going to be the guy, the 80 that we carry into the, you know, in right up until the regular season. And we'll get a better, you know, we'll be able to ascertain more what we need or not or don't need off of that. So it's going to be interesting. We might end up seeing players cut, or, you know, I don't have a good read on this one right now.
I'd roll the dice, stick with your 90, mm-hmm. have 80 at Allen Park, and just send the other 10 guys to Ford Field. And within a week, there's going to be like 10 guys injured. And they can just all go to Ford Field, you know.
Yeah, maybe
and stretch out, honestly. And then they don't have to get rid of everybody at first.
Yeah, you know, and there could be something to that. I bet there could be some teams that instead of cutting those 10, I hadn't thought about this, but instead of cutting those 10, they're just saying work it on your own. We're going to keep paying you, but you know, and we'll send one coach with you to work out or something like that. But yeah, if they don't want to cut those 10,
I wouldn't want to.
There could be a loophole here.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of loopholes, if the league stops abruptly, guaranteed money will still be paid to the players, but not necessarily in 2020.
Yeah, basically, one of the things that they did was, in the past, guaranteed money means if you get hurt, that money's still guaranteed. If you don't play, that money's still guaranteed to you. But now if games don't happen, the players still wanted their guaranteed money, but the NFL said, if we don't have money coming in, how are we going to pay you that guaranteed money? So what they agreed was that if the league has to stop and money isn't coming in anymore, the guaranteed money will get like a pin put in it, and then they'll just get that guaranteed money next season when money starts rolling in again. It's basically just a little nuance of how people get paid. What hasn't been clear is how will that impact the cap. We don't know that as of right now, because the guaranteed money typically will impact one season, or if it gets pushed to the next, like we don't know how the cap implications of that will work out.
So the loophole is anybody under the cap right now and not likely going to add anybody could like start pulling loads of guaranteed money into this season if it didn't affect, if it was like, well, all the guaranteed money from 2020 sticks with 2020's cap, right? Wouldn't that be your move if you were a GM?
Maybe.
Start dragging future guaranteed money into this season so it doesn't count against future caps?
Well, the guaranteed money is still going to count either way, or, you know, the contracts are still going to count either way, but by getting the guaranteed money in early now would just allow you to cut that player later. So I don't think
the players wouldn't agree. All right. I don't think, never mind. All right. So the salary cap, so we start talking about all these quote unquote financial losses the teams are going to take. Now, I don't know if I quite believe that. So the salary cap is,
Say the anticipated losses from no fans is around $3 billion with a B. So that right there is going to be a hit that they're going to take. And based on the other losses that they're anticipating, they were expecting the salary cap to have a massive loss.
$100 million a team, huh? Or a little bit less than $100 million a team from your 10 games of revenue. Say it's $100 million. So you're making $10 million a game. I guess that is feasible. Charge $100 a ticket on average and you get $60,000. All right, I'll buy it. I mean, I'm not buying they're really losing money. But, yeah, you know, I'm buying that they will take financially compared to other seasons. Mm-hmm. All right, the 2020 salary cap stays at $198.2 million. Next year, the floor drops to $175 million.
Yeah, so basically what they've done is they've taken what they're anticipating losing this year, and then they're trying to spread the losses out over multiple years. Last podcast, we talked about the league wanting it to all happen at once and the players union wanting to spread it over 10 years. They compromised and landed at 4. So just to kind of clarify how this all works out, the way the salary cap is established is they take the profits from 2020 and then 52% of the profits go to the owners and 48% of the profits go to the players. Of that 48%, they take off things like healthcare, long-term financial like planning, stuff like that, like retirement funds, stuff like that, all come off the top of that 48. Then whatever's left is what they used to determine the salary cap. So the anticipation was based on the revenue lost that the salary cap would drop significantly, like almost like between 50 and 70 million they were anticipating. And when you drop 50 to 70 million in the cap, teams wouldn't be able to handle that. Veterans would get cut, all these massive like structural things would collapse that the league has been working on for decades now. So instead, they're taking that loss, spreading it over 4 seasons, and then they've established a floor of $175 million for next season. Now, if the loss isn't as significant, then that $175 million might go up. But if it doesn't, then it won't go any lower. They'll offset the lower floors in the 3 seasons after that. But basically they've said 175, it won't go any lower than that. Well, that allows teams to start planning and anticipating how much money they're going to have, for signing free agents. How much do you want to have that rolls over? For example, the Lions are, they already have $175 million allocated next year. So what if the cap is at 175, like they're anticipating, they've already spent that 175. So the way that they get money is they're going to have to roll over as much money from this year as possible. So right now they've got around 23 million in available space. If they don't sign any more players, they can take that 23 and push it over into 2021. And now all of a sudden they've got 23 million in 2021 that they can now spend to make adjustments and whatnot. But that's not going to be enough. They're also going to have to look at redoing some players' contracts. They're going to have to look at players who I think anybody making over $3 million is going to be vulnerable to having their contract cut. So they're going to have to look at a handful of guys and say, are you living up to your money? Are we going to cut this player in order to save X number of dollars, and then move on from there? So just to give you an idea of where teams sit, the Lions are like dead middle of the 2020 available salary cap next year. With their $23 million, they'll be dead middle at 16. There's a whole bunch. There's 15 teams above them that are going to have more than that. But then there's 16 teams below them that are going to have less. And those 16 teams are going to be in very difficult spots. And that includes all three teams in the division. If the Packers were to roll over everything that they have from this season and then anticipated what they have next year, they'd only have $4.8 million to spend next year. The Vikings and the Bears would both open up the season in the red. They'd both start the season over the cap. There's actually eight teams that would start the season over the cap, the worst one being the Eagles, who are $71 million over the cap.
They were already over to begin with then.
Yes, and so are the Saints, who are at $66 million. So there's some teams
win that now. Saints are win now.
Yep, there are some teams that are in some very, very desperate spots where they're going to have to shed a whole bunch of contracts. Lions won't be in that situation as much. Like I said, they're going to have a handful of guys they're going to have to evaluate. They're probably going to have to lose some of their guys that are in contract years, like Marvin Jones. He might not come back because they can't afford him. And then maybe Marvin has to take a lower amount than he wanted to because this is the fallout now, because there's 23 or less million dollars per team than there was this year. There's everybody's going to feel the burn from this over the next probably decade. Players are going to be working to try and get their contracts back up. The league is just spreading out this loss, and there's going to be a ripple effect from this. This is going to impact at least the next 5 years and probably more.
All right. Next up, Lions Infectious Disease Emergency Response Plan approved. They're one of eight teams that have been approved for it. Do we even need to talk about this?
No, it just means that they're allowed to bring people in. So that's official. They can bring people in if they want.
All right. So the league and the Players Association agreed to daily testing. Surprise, surprise. Yep. Preseason has been canceled. We knew that. Training camp will begin on time. We talked about that. Lions rookies reporting next week with the rest of the team. So covered all of that. Now let's get into the meat of this week's podcast, and that's the fifth, not just anybody's 53-man roster projection, but yours, yep. Eric. This is a article for anybody to check out on Lions Wire, and many of you probably have already read it. So we'll start going through position by position. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball, as always, and at quarterback.
So you've got three guys, right? You've got Stafford, you've got Chase Daniel, you've got David Blough. Stafford is your big ticket item. No shock he's going to start. Chase Daniel's your number two. And in my mind, the way this is structured, I think they just shift Blough to the practice squad because of the ability to call players up. If they feel like they need to protect them, they can. And in my opinion, I think they're just going to stay with two and then just, you know, keep Blough there. There's no reason to keep him on the 53 at this stage, especially with that player protection clause, if they're worried about it.
All right. Running back position.
This one's gets a little trickier, right?
Because do they keep a fullback?
Right, yeah.
Although they'll have a fullback at left guard.
They will. Kerryon's your starter, and Swift will be your starter number two,
co-starter,
right? Yeah, and we've talked about this previously based on questions we've had from listeners. They're going to platoon. We're going to see. It's possible Swift ends up taking over at some point, but Kerryon's going to start the league. Will they keep Nick Bowden? I don't know. It's hard to tell. Special teams value is very important, and he'll bring that. But the way the Lions have used a fullback in the past, it's been minimal. And I'd love to see them have a fullback that they can use, but that's a big question mark for me. So for me, Bowden has been on the out. Ty Johnson, I think, is your complimentary back that's going to be, if Swift or Kerryon Johnson go down, I think Ty Johnson's that number. He can be that fill-in for them. Same thing with Scarborough, who we've talked about in the past, is that he's that Thunder. And Jason Huntley, the rookie, I think makes the team. There's some question about whether he is going to be a stash player, like he could be another player they put on practice squad. I think they have a plan for him. I think they have a role. So I have
Huntley. I like the J.D. McKissick role.
Yeah, exactly. So I have Johnson, Swift, Johnson, Huntley, and Scarborough all making the team. And because I have all five running backs, that pushes Bowden out. There's just not enough room for six. I just don't think they could do it. Could they shift Johnson or Huntley to the practice squad to keep Bowden? They could, but I don't see the value in it. Like I said, if it does happen, it's going to be special teams probably related, because they still have Isaac Nauta, who can fill in as like an H-back. So that would leave Bowden out. That would leave Wes Hills out. That would leave Luke Sellers, the undrafted rookie fullback, out. And Lions end up rolling with five true running backs.
All right, moving on to the wide receiver position. You have them keeping six wide receivers.
Yeah, and I think the main ones are pretty, expected, with Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay, Danny Amendola. Those are your big three. I think most people have become comfortable with the fact that Marvin Hall is that deep threat that they don't have anywhere else on the roster. And so he is just such a valuable weapon. It sure seems like he's going to keep either that wide receiver four or five role. You drafted Quintez Cephas for a reason. So he's going to make the team, and that gives you five right off the bat. That's five. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to keep a sixth one, it basically, in my mind, is it Jamal Agnew who's converting over? Is it Geronimo Allison? Can Fulgham or Lacey find some magic that they found a little bit last year in training camp? Maybe. Sure looks like they brought in Allison for a reason. The thing with Allison, though, is so in my mind, they wanted to do two things with the offensive skill players. They wanted to add speed to the offensive skill players, and they wanted to add a big slot option. They added speed with Huntley. They added speed by switching Jamal Agnew over. Those are two sub 4.4 guys. Those are both 4.3 guys. Now, you drafted Quintez Cephas and you signed Geronimo Allison. Both of those guys are like big slots to me. And mm-hmm. in my mind, Cephas is going to be the guy that probably knocks Allison off the roster, because again, you've invested in Cephas from some draft capital. You also have a tight end in Bryant that we're going to get to in a second, Hunter Bryant, who is another big tight end or big slot option. So in my mind, I'm leaning towards them valuing speed over multiple big slots. And that is probably what pushes Allison off the roster for me. I know that keeping Agnew is it's going to rub some people the wrong way, but he has good value on on special teams. He has, he can play in the slot. He can play outside. They've used him as a gadget player in the past. All of those options are still on the table. I think they're going to be hesitant to move away from him. There are several people that think I'm wrong in that thinking Agnew's going to make it, but I'm okay sticking with it for now. If he doesn't adapt, though, if he doesn't adapt to the offensive role, and maybe they're confident that Huntley can be a special team returner, Agnew could be in trouble. But just because if Agnew doesn't make it, that doesn't necessarily mean Allison's going to get in, because you're still got Hunter Bryant that we just talked about, that we're going to talk about more in a second. And then, maybe it's Fulgham or Lacey. They want a different style of receiver. But in my mind, it's Agnew until I see or hear otherwise, as that kind of gadget wide receiver six type guy.
All right. Moving over to the tight ends, you have them keeping three, and they're the pretty obvious three. with an Eric omission. So we'll have to hear about that.
Yeah, so Jesse James is and TJ Hockenson are your 1-2. Isaac Nauta is your three, and he's your blocking tight end who you can use like in goal line sets, and you can also use him as an H-back. His hands are underrated, in my opinion, which is going to go far for him. But then Hunter Bryan is just a completely different type of tight end. He is a weapon in the slot, and he's a guy who I could see them saying, if they believe in Marvin Hall and his deep speed, that and they don't think they have room for Agnew, I could see Hunter Bryan taking that spot. He's just such a mismatch in the slot. He has such good yak, and that's something that they're missing. And if they can get again, he's a guy though that if they don't, if he doesn't make the 53, he's a guy that I could see them drop on the practice squad and then add a protection label on him so that he doesn't go anywhere, because he's a bit of a rare talent. At one point last season, Hunter Bryant was my number one tight end in college, right? And then a series of things caused him to go undrafted, and then but he produces on the field. And I think we sometimes forget about that when we look at a player's like intangibles and measurables. We forget how good of a player they are on the field, and that's where I think Hunter Bryant will shine.
All right, moving down to the offensive line, the biggest position group on the team, both physically, literally, and the number of guys they're going to keep on the 53, man. You got them keeping 9.
Yeah, the nine are Taylor Decker at left guard. Or I'm sorry, at left tackle.
Left tackle, go left to right.
Yeah, Taylor Decker at left tackle, Joe Dahl at left guard, Frank Ragnow at center. And then because there's no preseason, I'm pegging Kenny Wiggins as the right guard for now. And then right tackle is Hal Vitae. Tyrell Crosby is going to back up both Decker and Vitae at the tackle spot, which leaves them the option to not really need to keep any of the other tackles. That means Dan Skipper, Matt Nelson, they're probably not making the team, or I didn't have them making the team in my initial 53. And then on the interior, you've got Jonah Jackson and Logan Stenberg, who are your two drafted rookies. And then I had Bo Benchowl, your undrafted rookie from last year, making the team. I do think the competition between Benchowl and Ode Abouche is going to be the one to watch. But I also think it's possible that neither Benchowl nor Ode Abouche make this roster, and they only stick with 8. The reason I think they can do that is, again, because of the added practice squad rules, the ability to elevate players. And if the Lions are looking at the roster saying, I need an extra skill player like a Hunter Bryant on this roster, we don't want to lose them, they may only go with 8 offensive linemen this year, and then they may carry extra offensive linemen on their practice squad. You only carry 7 on game days, right?
Yeah, that's why I would think you'd only have 8 instead of 9.
And
since you have the practice squad, more practice squad spots open.
Yeah, and so that's the trick for me. Right now I'm sticking with 9 because that's what they've done, but it's very possible that we could see a shift from teams shifting to 8 offensive linemen. So if they shift to 8, I think that's bad news for Benchowl. I think that's bad news for Ode Abouche. Both of those guys I do think could go to the practice squad as call-up guys. Again, you can pay them a higher salary on the practice squad in order to entice them to stay with you on your practice squad, so they could both get that. But with the new rules, I'm guessing we could very well see a couple of guys like that stashed on the practice squad. So because the practice squad is going to be so important for, you know, holding guys that are ready to play, that's going to be bad news for a guy like Matt Nelson, who they've been trying to develop. I don't know if there's a spot for him anymore to keep a developmental guy around. So he might actually be, you know, a victim of the COVID, you know, roster construction. unless Joshua Garnett or Russell Bodine are able to show anything in camp, I think they're gone. I mean, they're both big name players. Bodine has 48 starts. Garnett was a first round pick, but neither of them played in the league last year, right? And I don't see any of them being a higher priority for the Lions than Benchall or Abushe, considering Benchall and Abushe were both on the Lions active roster all year when they could have brought in Bodine or Garnett. So in my mind, they're kind of low men. They're going to be low men on the totem pole of the offensive line. I think they'll stick around for camp because the Lions want to roll through, you know, as many offensive linemen as they can. But I don't see Bodine and Garnett putting up much of a fight. I don't think Beniach is going to put up much of a fight. I think Skipper will try and make a contest out of it, but with Kenny Wiggins' ability to play right guard and right tackle, I think that makes him a little bit more expendable, especially when you have when you're going to need to keep more interior offensive linemen who have more upside in guys that you've invested capital in. So 8 or 9, I have 9 right now, but yeah, shifting to 8 isn't out of the question at all.
All right. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, the defensive line, you have the Lions only keeping 7 along the defensive line.
Yeah, and so that includes the down defensive end, the nose tackle, and the defensive tackle, the 3/5 technique, the hybrid position there. At defensive end, I think it's pretty much a no-brainer that Trey Flowers and Romeo Okwara are both going to be that defensive end. Jonathan Wynn has been a guy they've kept around for a while on the practice squads, but Wynn is a guy who I'm not sure there's room for him based on the way the other players around him on defense. It would be a tall task for him to make the squad. Shelton was brought in to be your nose tackle, and so there'll be a nice competition between John Atkins and John Penasini. In my mind, everything I hear about Penasini gives him an edge, so I'm expecting him to get the nod. He got the nod in my 53. Atkins has some potential, but he's still a little bit too inconsistent. Penasini has upside and a bigger skill set, so that's why he got the nod for me. And then at that 3-5, I'm anticipating Deshaun Hand to be fully healthy. I'm expecting him to start, and then that puts Nick Williams as the guy that he'll be rotating with for most of the time. So Nick Williams, even though Nick Williams is the highest paid defensive tackle that they have, I don't think he'll necessarily be a technical starter. I think Hand's versatility is just too good, and his ability to impact is just so off the charts that I don't see how you can't put him in a starting spot. The last spot, as you mentioned, the 7th spot is going to be between 7th round pick Jayshon Cornell and Kevin Strong. I really like Cornell's upside, but for me, until he shows on the field that he can do the things that Kevin Strong can do, I'm still leaning towards Kevin Strong. I don't think he's got one of the best first steps on this defensive line, and he's just scratching the surface of what he can do. He's going to get the edge for me early here ahead of training camp. If Cornell can prove me wrong, he's going to have to do it in 8 practices. I think he's a guy, though, that's probably a stash on the practice squad and try and develop him. So that's the battle for that 7th spot. That puts Frank Heron on the outs. That puts Sekapolu on the outs, the reserve nose tackle. I just think Sekapolu was brought in case we don't get Penasini, and then they got Penasini. So I think that's a tough spot for Sekapolu to be in. And the same thing with Frank Heron. It's, I want to get another guy that can do the things Frank Heron can do, and they brought in 2 of them. So I think that's going to be bad news for Frank Heron.
All right, now the next level, the linebackers. Once again, you only have the Lions keeping 7.
Yeah, and it starts with the edge rushers, right? You've got Julian Okwara and Austin Bryant. You know, I think we forget a little bit about Austin Bryant because he was injured most of last season.
Yep.
Yeah, but, the potential's still there. They use a 4th-round draft pick on him for a reason. he can be a down defensive end. He can be a pass rushing linebacker. He's got a little bit of what Romeo Okwara has, except he can stand up a little bit easier than Romeo can. But then Romeo's brother, Julian, he is, I think, one of the guys that's going to be the future of this linebacking crew, where he's going to be asked to play a pass rushing role early, but his ability to cover is something that Devin Kennard was missing, and the reason why Devin Kennard is in Arizona and the Lions used a third round pick on Julian. So Julian Okwara is going to be a guy who it's going to be very interesting to see how much they use him. I think they're going to lean on the other off the ball linebackers early. And if they can incorporate Julian as they go, it'll be very interesting to see how he develops. I think the long-term game plan, and we've said this before, for Julian Okwara is to be Jamie Collins. And Jamie Collins is going to be the straw that stirs the drink in this linebacking crew, right? So Jamie Collins is going to lead the way. I think it's going to be hard for the Lions to take him off the field just because he can play all three linebacker spots. And he's going to be, I believe he's really the catalyst for this second level. Collins is going to be on the field pretty much at all times. Now, who's going to be standing next to him? I think Tavai is going to, he's got the higher ceiling than Jared Davis, even though those two might be splitting reps at the mic. And then Christian Jones is going to get in the mix as well. Christian Jones does a lot of the same things Jamie Collins does. He just doesn't do them as well. The value is still there. The versatility is still there. So then Christian Jones is also going to be a regular staple on the field for the Lions. Wouldn't be surprising to me if Jones, Davis, Tavai all saw over 50% of the snaps, and then Collins saw upwards of like 80 to 90% of the snaps, just because I think they're going to lean on those guys so much. So then that doesn't leave as much for Okwara and Bryant, but you know, their roles are going to be more specific because they're younger players who are still developing. The last guy of the linebacking crew that I have is Jalen Reeves-Maybin. And that's not because of what he does as a linebacker. That's because of what he does on special teams. I don't think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to have special teams only type players, but there's going to be a couple of spots for those guys. I don't know if they can keep both a Miles Killebrew and a Jalen Reeves-Maybin. I think they'd like to, but then when we start talking about the secondary in a minute, we're going to have other guys in the secondary that are going to have key spots. So could it end up being Killebrew over Reeves-Maybin? Absolutely. But Reeves-Maybin was a better special teamer last year, so I gave him the edge. The wild card here is Reggie Ragland. Ragland is a guy who is a great fit for this scheme, and I've actually gone back and started looking at some of the stuff that he did with the Chiefs last year, and I've completely changed my outlook on him.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, he was – so at Alabama, he was a mic. When he was in Buffalo, he was a mic. When Kansas City brought him over, they brought him as a mic. And then last year, they shifted him to more like an off-the-ball will, like the way the Lions use their will. And he had a lot more success. And when you look at where he lines up pre-snap, it looks eerily similar to Christian Jones. And that type of – he showed me more versatility than I thought he had prior. That type of versatility makes me think maybe he's in play. Maybe he can bump a Reeves-Maybin or a Killebrew out because of, you know, the Lions are looking more for a linebacker than they are for a special teamer. The thing is you need special teams guys, which is why I had Reeves-Maybin in over Ragland. But again, Ragland is a guy who I could see them paying extra to, putting on the practice squad, and then protecting. So he's kind of a wild card for me. I'm starting to change my tune on him a little bit, but for right now, he's still on the outs for me. Then that also leaves – so then the last couple of guys on linebackers that are on the outs for me, Anthony Pittman and Christian Sam are developmental guys who I think are going to – would have a hard time getting in. Kabinda and Elijah Lee are more special team types guys who have other players ahead of them that do things better than they do on defense and on special teams. So I think it's going to be hard for them to make it. They're, right now, until I see something otherwise, I had them on the outs.
All right, finally, the defensive backfield as far as the defense goes. And actually, you have this being the largest position group the Lions will keep on the 53-man roster. You have 11 defensive backs out of the 53 guys, so a little over 20% of the roster being devoted there. We'll start with corners. You have them keeping six corners.
Yeah, Trufant and Okuda and Justin Coleman, those are your three. Coleman should get an opportunity to play a lot of slot this year. Last year, he split time between the slot and outside. I think he'll get a lot more time in the slot this year. That should help him improve his game a little bit. Trufant, I think, is such an established veteran, and he should do well in this man-type scheme. He's going to take a starting role. And they've basically said since they drafted Okuda that he's going to take on that starting role. So I think those are all established. I think the fourth corner in Amani Oruwariye is, again, a lock at cornerback four. He's a guy who could step in as a starting spot if something happened to one of the other three. So those four right there are off the bat are set. The questions then became, what are they going to value at those corner five and corner six spots? And this is where your gunners come from. You got to get at least one gunner out of this cornerback group. And so that came down to D-Virgin versus Tony McCray for me from a gunner standpoint. And then from a cornerback standpoint, from a cornerback five standpoint, it was Mike Ford versus Daryl Roberts. Daryl Roberts has a lot of experience, and he was a starter not too long ago for the Jets. It's possible that he steps in and he gives them that veteran presence that they want at corner, and that the Lions are going to value that in this COVID environment. But then again, at the same time, Mike Ford's been on this team for a couple of years, and he's played a very key role. He understands the scheme. There's not going to be a learning curve for him. So I leaned towards experience in the scheme and kept Mike Ford. I do think Roberts will be clipping on his heels, though, but I have Ford in there for now. The Virgin-McCray competition for the special team spot, Virgin has been a gunner for the Lions the last 2 years, but they have a whole new special teams coaching staff, and Tony McCray was the guy for Braden Combs, the Lions' new special teams coach in Cincinnati last year. So Combs really likes McCray. And I think from what I watched of McCray, the potential's there. I could see him kind of going either way, but I lean towards McCray and his connection with the coaching staff over Virgin being a gunner only. McCray gives a little bit of slot coverage ability. So if something were to happen to Justin Coleman, he could step in for some snaps. But whereas I don't think Virgin necessarily has that. So I'm leaning towards McCray getting that cornerback six and being a starting gunner on special teams.
All right, now let's move on to the five safeties. Of course, headlined by Tracy Walker.
Yeah, Tracy Walker is, of course, the guy who's going to be one of the most impactful players, I believe, in this season. Daron Harmon is the guy who's going to make Tracy Walker flexible because Harmon's ability to roam center field. After that, Will Harris is a guy you drafted in the third round just a year ago, and you're going to allow him to play the third safety role, which is much better suited for him. So he, in my mind, is locked in at that third spot. Now, he might not see safety three reps all the time because they went out and signed Jaron Kearse. Now, Kearse is a guy who I think can back up the third safety role behind Will Harris. I think he can also back up Tracy Walker at the Joker. Curse's flexibility to play at both of those spots will allow the Lions to keep personnel on the field but shift them around. If Daron Harmon needs to step out for a rep or, a series, you can shift Curse to the Joker spot, shift Walker to the single high, and you can still roll with the guys that you have. So those four, in my mind, seem like the clear-cut four guys. And then after that, you've got four undrafted players, three of them rookies, and one of them was a rookie last year in C.J. Moore. C.J. Moore is my fifth safety, and I'm keeping him because he was, again, a starting gunner last year, and you can see his development rising. If he can learn from Harmon on how to be a single high, then that affords the Lions the ability to keep Harris and Curse and Walker in the slot. So I think Moore is a key guy in making these safeties as efficient as possible. So I'm slotting him in as the fifth safety. Now, Bobby Price, Jalen Elliott, Jeremiah Dinson, all of those guys are undrafted safeties, and they all have potential. And I think in any given year, you might see all three of them on the practice squad. But in this environment, I don't know if all three of them, if there's room for all three of them. I think at least one, maybe two, we're going to make it. If I had to guess, I'd follow the money and say it's Elliott and Denson. But then Bobby Price might be the most athletic player on defense, except for Jamie Collins. So there's a lot of things to like about Price as well. So I don't know. I don't know how the practice squad is going to shake out with those three. This is one of those situations where I kind of have to see them. But as far as making the squad, I don't think that they're farther enough along in their development that you would, with no preseason, that you would think they're going to take a 53-man spot. I do want to add in, I left off Michael Jackson as the corner. They was the one guy I left out. I didn't mention as a corner. I had him as just a guy with not enough experience as well that I have on the outs in my 53.
All right, finally, last but certainly not least, the three specialists to round out the 53, man.
Right, so Prater's your kicker. He's the only kicker on the roster. He's making $3.9 million this year, and he's worth every penny. He is in the final year of his contract, and he is due a contract extension, in my mind. You're going to pay him about that much with an extension, so it doesn't matter, you know, all the cap stuff we talked about for the 2021 and beyond. I don't think any of that would impact the ability to extend Prater. I think getting Prater under contract is something we could see happen this August. And it shouldn't be that big of an impact on this year's cap or future caps. So I'd like to see him get signed. Excuse me. The long snapper battle is not much of a battle. It's going to be Mulbach, right? The mule is coming back for another season, and that's tough for Steve Wortel, who really is going to be one of the most impacted players on this roster because he doesn't have a preseason to show what he's worth. And that's a shame because he's a guy who, you know, I think has some good developmental qualities where he could be a potential long snapper in the league, but he's just not going to get that opportunity because of how it works. So, you know, I think the Lions will keep his phone number handy, but I don't think he'll end up on the practice squad. I think he's a guy who, you know, they may bring back and work out and you know, keep tabs on him. But I think his chances of making this roster might be the slimmest of everybody that we have just because of the player in front of him. The last one is the battle at punter between Jack Fox and Aaron Sipos. We've been leaning towards Fox this whole offseason, so nothing has changed. I went with Fox again in my 53-man projection, and it's mostly because, you know, he's got the big leg. He's the guy they invested in. He's the guy they spoke highly about before, whereas Sipos was an undrafted guy out of, you know, Auburn. And, you know, while the potential might be there for him to win the job, we just haven't seen it yet. With no preseason, again, that hurts him with no preseason. So it's really going to come down to how these two battle it out in camp. And they're both young. They're both inexperienced at the NFL level. So it's really a coin toss. I just landed on Fox right now because of, you know, the fact that the Lions went after him earlier. So that's it. He's the 53rd guy. And, you know, there's 10 battles in here that we talked about that
could
go either way. But for the most part, I think there's 43 kind of very established decisions. And then there's another 10 that'll be decided by 8 practices, you know, 8 padded practices, which is sad for the younger guys. and unfortunate for the rest of us, but that's just the environment in which we are in right now.
All right, that's it. I did want to note, I wanted to bring something up that I saw the other day. The note that was sent out to season ticket holders that said the Lions are, quote, anticipating a reduced seating capacity with social distance seating, unquote, at Ford Field. Now, how serious is that? Because, like, you know, we just watched opening day in baseball on Thursday and Friday, and nobody's at the games, just people who work for the team.
Sure.
What are the odds that any of the NFL teams are going to have fans in the stands this year? Like, maybe they're just keeping the season ticket holders, let them hold out hope.
I'd say about half the teams have, maybe a little bit more than half the teams have taken the same stance as the Lions, saying they were anticipating, you know, a reduced seating. But a couple of them have already come out and said, no, we're not going to have anybody in the stands. So I don't know. I think it's wishful thinking on the Lions part.
Sure. And that's good. You know, like, we're all ready for the day where everything can go away and we can all start being out there again.
Yeah. I think they just, I don't think they want to write off anything until it's, you know, fully established and done. Right. Like, I think they want to keep all cards on the table as far as making money until those options are gone. And they're not gone yet, but I have a feeling they're heading that way.
Yep. All right. That was all I wanted to add.
All right. Should we do shout outs?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's we good on time? All right.
Yeah. We got plenty of time.
So we're at 307 reviews. We got another one last week. The one we got last week was from American A Werewolf.
A Werewolf, yep.
Yeah. Really high complimentary stuff from him. That was super nice. And again, those reviews help us keep going. So American A Werewolf, nice. I enjoy that name very much. And the review was even better. And so we appreciate that a lot. We're going to keep the Patreon's going to keep going. I know that I need to get a Zoom call going with my Patreon top level subscribers. That's going to happen soon. It's just a matter of trying to get the right time for everything, but I want to get one of those out for everybody. I am diligently working on a big board for an update for the Patreon subscribers as well. I've been adding in just a ridiculous amount of players for the college season. If the college season is played, it'll be in the fall, it'll be helpful. If it's not, well, you'll have some study work for the springtime then, right? So I'm trying to get all those things ready. We appreciate all the people that are still contributing and helping us keep putting the podcast out. So thank you to everyone that's contributing. Thank you to all the people that have reviewed and in the past. It's all these things are very much appreciated.
Yeah. No, and thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. And hey, training camp's upon us. We're going to be seeing at least some long shot distance video of them practicing at Allen Park within a few weeks. And until that time, let's go Lions.